We're starting chapter 4 of Emma. Harriet Smith's intimacy at Hartfield was soon a settled thing. Quick and decided in her ways, Emma lost no time in inviting, encouraging, and telling her to come very often. And as their acquaintance increased, so did their satisfaction in each other. As a walking companion, Emma had very early foreseen how useful she might find her. In that respect, Mrs. Weston's loss had been important. Her father never went beyond the shrubbery, where two divisions of the ground sufficed him for his long walk, or his short as the year varied. And since Mrs. Weston's marriage, her exercise had been much too confined. She had ventured once alone to Randall's, but it was not pleasant, and to Harriet Smith, therefore, one whom she could summon at any time to a walk, would be a valuable addition to her privileges. But in every respect, as she saw more of her, she approved her, and was confirmed in all her kind designs. Harriet certainly was not clever, but she had a sweet, docile, grateful disposition, was totally free from conceit, and only desiring to be guided by anyone she looked up to. Her early attachment to herself was very amiable, and her inclination for good company, and power of appreciating what was elegant and clever, showed that there was no want of taste, though strength of understanding must not be expected. Altogether, she was quite convinced of Harriet Smith's being exactly the young friend she wanted, exactly the something which her home required. Such a friend as Mrs. Weston was out of the question. Two such could never be granted. Two such she did not want. It was quite a different sort of thing, a sentiment distinct and independent. Mrs. Weston was the object of her regard, which had its basis in gratitude and esteem. Harriet would be loved as one to whom she could be useful. For Mrs. Weston, there was nothing to be done. For Harriet, everything. Her first attempts at usefulness were in an endeavor to find out who were the parents, but Harriet could not tell. She was ready to tell everything in her power, but on this subject questions were vain. Emma was obliged to fancy what she liked, but she could never believe that in the same situation she could not have discovered the truth. Harriet had no penetration. She had been satisfied to hear and believe just what Mrs. Goddard chose to tell her, and looked no further. Mrs. Goddard and the teachers and the girls and the affairs of the school in general formed naturally a great part of the conversation, and but for her acquaintance with the Martins of Abbey Mill Farm, it must have been the whole. But the Martins occupied her thoughts a great deal. She had spent 2 very happy months with them, and now loved to talk of the pleasures of her visit, and describe the many comforts and wonders of the place. Emma encouraged her talkativeness, amused by such a picture of another set of beings, and enjoying the youthful simplicity which could speak with so much exultation of Mrs. Martin's having 2 parlors, 2 very good parlors indeed, one of them quite as large as Mrs. Goddard's drawing room, and of her having an upper maid who had lived 25 years with her, and of their having 8 cows, 2 of them Alderneys, and 1 a little Welsh cow, a very pretty little Welsh cow indeed, and of Mrs. Martin's saying, as she was so fond of it, it should be called her cow, and of their having a very handsome summer house in their garden, where some day next year they were all to drink tea, a very handsome summer house, large enough to hold 12 people. For some time she was amused, without thinking beyond the immediate cause, but as she came to understand the family better, other feelings arose. She had taken up a wrong idea, fancying it was a mother and a daughter, a son and son's wife, who all lived together, when it appeared that the Mr. Martin, who bore part of this narrative, was always mentioned with approbation for his great good nature in doing something or other, was a single man, and that there was no Mrs. Martin, no wife in this case, Did she suspect danger to her poor little friend from all this hospitality and kindness, and that, if she were not taken care of, she might be required to sink herself forever? With this inspiriting notion, her questions increased in number and meaning, and she particularly led Harriet to talk more of Mr. Martin, and there was evidently no dislike to it. Harriet was very ready to speak of the share he had had in their midnight walks and merry evening games, and dwelt a good deal upon his being so very good-humored and obliging. He had gone 3 miles round one day in order to bring her some walnuts, because she had said how fond she was of them, and in everything else he was so very obliging. He had his shepherd's son in the parlor one night on purpose to sing to her. She was very fond of singing. He could sing a little himself, she believed. He was very clever and understood everything. He had a very fine flock, and while she was with him, he had been bid more for his wool than anybody in the country. She believed everybody spoke well of him. His mothers and sisters were very fond of him. Mrs. Martin had told her one day, and there was a blush as she said it, that it was impossible for anybody to be a better son, and therefore she was sure whenever he married, he would make a good husband. Not that she wanted him to marry, she was in no hurry at all. Well done, Mrs. Martin, thought Emma. You know what you are about. And when she had come away, Mrs. Martin was so very kind as to send Mrs. Goddard a beautiful goose, the finest goose Mrs. Goddard had ever seen. Mrs. Goddard had dressed it on Sunday and asked all the three teachers, Miss Nash and Miss Prince and Miss Richardson, to sup with her. Mr. Martin, I suppose, is not a man of information beyond the line of his own business, Emma said. He does not read. Oh, yes, that is, no, I do not know, but I believe he has read a good deal, but not what you would think of anything of. He reads the agriculture reports and some other books that lay in one of the window seats, but he reads all them to himself. He sometimes, of an evening, before we went to cards, would read something aloud out of the Elegant Extracts, very entertaining. And I know he has read The Vicar of Wakefield. He never read The Romance of the Forest, nor The Children of the Abbey. But he has never heard of such books before I mentioned them, but he is determined to get them now as soon as ever he can. The next question was, what sort of looking man is Mr. Barton? Oh, not handsome, not at all handsome. I thought him very plain at first, but I do not think him so plain now. One does not, you know, after a time. Did you never see him? He is in Highbury every now and then, and he is sure to ride through every week on his way to Kingston. He has passed you very often. That may be. I may have seen him 50 times, but without having any idea of his name. A young farmer, whether on horseback or on foot, is the very last sort of person to raise my curiosity. The yeomanry are precisely the order of people with whom I feel I can have nothing to do. A degree or two lower, a creditable appearance might interest me. I might hope to be useful to their families in some way or other. But a farmer can need none of my help, and is therefore, in one sense, as much above my notice as in every other he is below it. Oh, to be sure, yes. It is not likely you should ever have observed him. But he knows you very well indeed, I mean by sight. I have no doubt of his being a very respectable young man. I know, indeed, that he is so, and as such wish him well. What do you imagine his age to be? He was 24 the 8th of last June, and my birthday is the 23rd, just a fortnight and a day's difference, which is very odd. Only 24, that is too young to settle. His mother is perfectly right not to be in a hurry. They seem very comfortable as they are, and if she were to take any pains to marry him, she would probably repent it. 6 years hence, if he could meet with a good sort of young woman in the same rank as his own with a little money, it might be very desirable. 6 years hence, dear Miss Woodhouse, he would be 30 years old. Well, and that is as early as most men can afford to marry, who are not born to an independence. Mr. Martin, I imagine, has had his fortune entirely to make, cannot be at all beforehand with the world. whatever money he might come into when his father died, whatever his share of the family property, it is, I dare say, all afloat, all employed in his stock, and so forth. And though with diligence and good luck he may be rich in time, it is next to impossible that he should have realized anything yet. To be sure it is so, but they live very comfortably. They have no indoors man, else they do not want for anything, and Mrs. Martin talks of taking a boy another year. I wish you may not get into a scrape, Harriet, whenever he does marry. I mean, as to being acquainted with his wife, for though his sisters, from a superior education, are not to be altogether objected to, it does not follow that he might marry anybody at all fit for you to notice. The misfortune of your birth ought to make you particularly careful as to your associates. There can be no doubt of your being a gentleman's daughter, and you must support your claim to that station by everything within your power, for there will be plenty of people who would take pleasure in degrading you. Yes, to be sure, I suppose there are, but while I visit at Hartfield, and you are so kind to me, Mrs. Woodhouse, I am not afraid of what anybody can do. You understand the force of influence pretty well, Harriet, but I would have you so firmly established in good society as to be independent even of Hartfield and Miss Woodhouse. I want to see you permanently well connected, and to that end it will be advisable to have as few odd acquaintance as may be. And therefore, if I say that if you should still be in this country when Mr. Martin marries, I wish you may not be drawn in by intimacy with the sisters, be acquainted with a wife who will probably be some mere farmer's daughter without education. To be sure, yes, not that I think Mr. Martin would ever marry anybody but what had some education and been very well brought up. However, I do not mean to set up my opinion against yours, and I am sure I shall not wish him for the acquaintance of his wife. I shall always have a great regard for the Miss Martins, especially Elizabeth, and should be very sorry to give them up, for they are quite as well educated as me. But if he marries a very ignorant, vulgar woman, certainly I had better not visit her if I can help it. Emma watched her through the fluctuations of her speech, and saw no alarming symptoms of love. The young man had been the first admirer, but she trusted there was no other hold, and that there would be no serious difficulty on Harriet's side to oppose any friendly arrangements of her own. I think we'll stop there. And spend time with beautiful kids.
I love you so much.